KCRW sponsors include Netflix presenting The Gentlemen from Guy Ritchie, starring Theo James, Kaya Scodelario, and Daniel Ings. The playlist says The Gentlemen is filled with style, panache, and laughs. The Gentlemen, consider a new class of comedy.
This is KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand. The first week of September is in the books, and as we look ahead to the weekend, it is time for your film reviews. Christy Lemire and William Bibbiani are here to guide us. Christy is film critic for RogerEbert.com and co-host of the YouTube channel Breakfast All Day. And William is film critic for The Wrap and co-host of the critically acclaimed network. Welcome back to both of you.
Hello.
Ahoy, ahoy.
First up, we have the rom-com My Big Fat Greek Wedding 3. Nia Vardalos and John Corbett reprise their roles, and Nia Vardalos wrote and directed this too.
A lot has happened since My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Back like I never left.
My father passed away, and his last wish was for us to visit his childhood village and reconnect with our roots. So we're having a reunion.
We're going to Greece.
Oh, yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4.
And by we, I mean the whole family.
Oh. Who wants souvlaki?
Okay, Christy, a big fat Greek family reunion. Do we want to be in this reunion?
Oh, my God. This is just like a fever dream of bad choices. I sat there just boggled as to what Nia Vardalos was thinking. I actually thought I was watching it projected in the wrong aspect ratio. I really wondered whether it was being shown to me wrong because the framing is so off. And I asked several critic friends afterward and we were all boggled. People's heads get cut off. The framing is weird. The editing choices are very confusing. I'm nitpicking the technical stuff because I don't even want to talk about the actual story, which is that, yeah, the whole clan has to go back to this Greek island after the patriarch dies to scatter his ashes and have a reunion and locate his childhood friends. But that all gets caught up in the totally obligatory rehashing of all of the jokes from the previous two films. The first, My Big Fat Greek Wedding, was, of course, an enormous hit, made hundreds of millions of dollars. So they keep remaking it in various versions. And it's broad and hacky and so tired by now. Andrea Martin as Aunt Bula, thank God she's there because she gets the few funny lines in this movie. But there are so many editing choices that are so baffling that I was physically uncomfortable. Like it's distracting. Like there's no rhythm to it. There's no sense of pacing or like setup and payoff with the jokes. Like she cuts away to like the Greek countryside in the middle of a conversation for no apparent reason. John Corbett is in a whole different movie. I was just boggled the whole way through. This is just like, hey, it made a lot of money. Let's just keep doing it. And it's just with diminishing returns.
Oh, it's so sad because she wrote and starred in the first two, right? But this is her first time directing it, Nia Vardalos?
It's the first time directing this series, yes. And she is very likable on screen. She still has that thing. But as a director, directing herself and this enormous cast, it just all felt like it got away from her, like it was just a jumble. And like, I don't know whether there was coverage that was missing. And that's why there were some weird editing choices, like moments that should be poignant, like are shot in a way that's very distracting and we can't really get into it. It's weird. It's baffling.
Okay. So skip that one. My Big Fat Greek Wedding in theaters in wide release, if you dare. Next up, we have a dramatic comedy called Scrapper. This is about a 12-year-old girl living alone in a London flat.
Who's Ozzy?
Who's Oskin?
I'm Jason. I'm your dad.
Can't stay for long.
I'll stay as long as I want.
What if he's a big-time gangster?
Maybe he was in prison.
So hear me out on this one, yeah?
No, he's not a vampire. That's just stupid.
All right, Bibbs, this feels a little bit like a British version of Home Alone, except Georgie seems to have been living alone for longer than the Christmas holiday break. Tell us more about this movie.
And there's a lot less wacky violence, but it's also better. Scrapper is a new film from writer-director Charlotte Regan. It premiered at the Sundance Film Festival. It won an award there. It is blithely charming. It is such a delight, this film. Lola Campbell is a young actor. They play Georgie. She's precocious, but not in that like cherubic fake Hollywood way, but in that she has figured out how to game the system and live on her own while social workers are calling her and demanding to speak to an adult who is allegedly caring for her. No one is. But then her father shows up. He's played by Harris Dickinson from Triangle of Sadness. He seems kind of exactly the kind of guy who wouldn't have been there to raise his kid. But somehow they manage to find common ground over the course of the film and find each other. The humor in this film is just sparkling. It comes from wonderful characters who are actually like very interestingly drawn and interact with each other in amusing ways. There's a sort of understated playfulness to the way Charlotte Regan films it. This movie made me happier than most other movies this year, and I just could not tell people to see it enough.
Wow. So, Christy, it sounds a little bit like After Sun, except not depressingly sad.
I think it's more like Paper Moon.
Oh, okay.
Actually, it's kind of like that. And it feels that way in Lola Campbell's performance, in that, as Bib says, she's like wise beyond her years, but never in a cheesy, obnoxious Disney Channel child star way. This is her first film ever. And there's just total purity to her presence, to her performance, to her timing. It occupies this really tricky space between being light and playful and being like true to this working class scenario and to these people who really don't know each other and are going to have to figure out how to love each other if they're going to survive. And the way it straddles all of that with just total truth, but also lightness, like there's a structural playfulness here that is so unexpected. Like, it might seem twee in somebody else's hand. Like, it might seem like too quirky, too Sundance indie quirky, but it's so beautiful, so funny, so poignant by the end. I love this. Like, I'm so happy that Bibbs loved it. When I watched it, I'm like, you've got to make sure you watch Scrapper because it's so good. And it's going to end up in my top 10 list this year for sure. And it accomplishes so much in not even 90 minutes. It's really an impressive debut.
Oh, okay. So 4 thumbs up. Scrapper in theaters in limited release beginning on Friday.
Support comes from Toast, a refreshing alcohol-free beverage made for meaningful moments where you'd normally find alcohol. With a high-quality blend of natural ingredients and a sophisticated experience, Toast delivers without being overly sweet. Praised for its versatile food pairing ability, Toast is an elegant alternative to alcohol that can be enjoyed anytime, anywhere, by anyone. Toast, T-O-S-T, is available at area BevMo locations. Toast, be part of the moment.
Former dancer and current owner of Lake Girls Theater, Kata Pierce Morgan, peels back the layers of stripper energy, fighting back from the fringes.
There's many people who don't have the slightest idea what goes on at Lake Girls.
When we come back, nude dancers.
The stereotypes.
Are some of the dancers also prostitutes?
Could be pretty horrendous.
Doesn't it set you up for the possibility of violence?
The only abuse, physical abuse, that the dancers have ever experienced has been from the Vice Squad.
We obviously had a misunderstanding. We had a thing of improper procedure.
If a Vice officer takes control of a young dancer, they feel that the dancers are pretty much their property.
Nobody's coming to save us. We have to save ourselves.
You know, fight or flight, I'm the fighter.
Kata gives us unlimited access to a half century of archival material that chronicles her story, as well as the history of Lake Girls, the women who dance there, and the fierce activism launched from the unlikely stage of a strip club.
I'm this tough young woman, you know, I'll punch you in the nose. And I did.
Prepare for sassy strippers, corrupt cops, and a rare look inside the historic Lake Girls Theater. More information at kpbs.org/stripper energy.
Next, we have a dark political satire from Chilean director Pablo Larraín. It's called El Conde.
Todos los generales que ganan guerras tienen derecho a saquear, por supuesto.
El ejército de Chile me enseñó como un valor el acto de la tortura.
¿Alguien se metió en su maleta?
Trajo estacas y martillos de plata.
Okay, so quick translation. All generals who win wars are entitled to ransack. Of course, the Chilean army taught me that torturing was a value. Did anyone check her suitcase? It has steaks and silver hammers. All right, Christy, the dictator Augusto Pinochet died in 2006, but it seems like here he is alive as a vampire. Tell us more.
Yes, this is sort of a fascinating revisiting of history here. And what Pablo Larraín is doing is, you know, he's a Chilean filmmaker, and he's going back to some of his roots in, you know, exploring the ravages of this Chilean leader, the image of this person. But also you see some pieces of his more recent films like Jackie, like Spencer, where he is reimagining a famous person we think we know.
Spencer about Princess Diana.
Yes, exactly. And so you see, and Jackie about Jackie Kennedy. And so you see some of like the heightened kind of depiction of this famous person, and also just the claustrophobia of that kind of power and that kind of fame. And so in lushly, richly, impossibly gorgeous black and white from the great cinematographer Ed Lockman, and imagine Pinochet as a vampire. And that this person's been around since the days of Marie Antoinette. And so we see in this incredibly gory prelude, you know, how this person has been around for so many hundreds of years. And it almost becomes like a literally bloody version of Succession, because Pinochet wants to die, but has these horrible children who are useless, who are fighting over the money. And in the middle of all this comes this nun disguised as an accountant to help them sort through all of their documents and their bearer bonds, and is there to help them. And the way that this actress, Paula Luxinger, like straddles this line between being like wide-eyed and doe-ish and kind of seductive, but also like giving you that indication all the while that she knows exactly who these people are and what she needs to do to them, is this fascinatingly calibrated performance. It's a really cool idea. And then it kind of runs out of steam. Like once you get through the novelty of, hey, what if Pinochet were a vampire? It kind of runs out of steam after a little while, but it's gorgeous always.
Bibbs, what did you think?
I agree with Christy on one point in particular. I think it absolutely runs out of steam once it runs through all the possibilities of Pinochet as a vampire. The difference between us is that I think that moment happens less than 5 minutes into the film.
Oh, no.
Paul Larraín can be a great filmmaker. Here he leans really, really hard into the supernatural elements here and sort of re-envisioning this figure as an actual honest-to-goodness vampire. But it actually, I found its overall approach to that material, to that concept, almost annoyingly tedious. It's just, he's a vampire, all right. He's really quite a jerk. And all his family is also jerks. Oh, okay. Well, that's really interesting. Well, at least there's this nun here, and this will amount to tedious hypocrisy. Okay, great. And I remember watching the movie thinking, you know what would be the absolute most insipid thing they could possibly do with that plot point? And then it happened. I was genuinely annoyed by this movie. And I will say this. Pablo Larraín is such a specific filmmaker that to be annoyed by Pablo Larraín is arguably more interesting than being mildly entertained by a lot of other people. But that doesn't mean the film isn't annoying.
Wow. Okay. A split decision here. El Conde in theaters in limited release beginning Friday and on Netflix beginning on September 15th. Last up, we have another horror movie. And speaking about nuns, this is another sequel called The Nun 2. And it stars Thaisa Farmiga, whom some may know from American Horror Story and The Gilded Age.
This thing, it's come back for me.
This demon was once an angel. Rejected by God. Stripped of power.
It wants that power back.
All right, Bibbs. Farmiga plays Sister Irene, who once again has to face a demon nun, and this time after a priest is murdered. What next?
We wait around for a while as she very slowly makes her way to this sort of haunted boarding school. And then she gets there like way too late for it to be super interesting while the movie kind of just shovels in some kind of tedious, disconnected. I use tedious a lot this week. It's unfortunately apt. Jump scares, which don't even really make sense thematically or in the context of the plot. The original Nun movie, which was a spinoff of The Conjuring 2, was a stylish and abundantly silly movie. It was incredibly popular. I totally get why we made another one of these. But that sort of nonsensical gothic roller coaster ride that you got from the original Nun is really frustratingly abandoned here. There's a couple of good jump scares throughout, but it's actually just aggressively generic in most of its construction. It comes together a bit at the end. A lot of ridiculous things happen like in the last like 20 minutes in rapid succession, and there's a certain amount of entertainment value to be had from that. But this is a movie that really, really, really struggles to justify its own existence. And that's annoying because it's a horror movie. You don't need much to justify your existence. You merely need to entertain. It would be nice if you had something on your mind or some, not to borrow another James Wan horror franchise, but like Insidious, something to get under your skin and genuinely creep you out. It's okay to just be a popcorn horror thriller. But here, to quote Eddie Izzard, you can't even eat your popcorn to that.
Okay, seems like the word of the day from Bibbs is tedious. Christy, would you pile another tedious onto this one?
I think this was better than the first Nun.
Oh, Christy.
I didn't even like the first Nun. The first Nun? No, the first Nun felt to me like the Conjureverse version of the Minions movie. You know how like a little bit of the Minions go a long way, and then you make a whole movie about the Minions and it gets tiresome really quickly? That's how the first Nun was to me. I feel like this has more atmosphere. This has great mood as far as the misty nighttime corridors and streets of France. And so I think it sets the tone in traditionally kind of gothic horror ways pretty effectively. And Thaisa Farmiga is always really good. Like, she grounds a lot of the material that might seem really silly. And the Nun is undeniably creepy, but this becomes really predictable because, like, once you see a chapel or a hallway or a stairway, it's like, oh, the nun's going to be there. Here comes the nun. Like, once you know she's coming, like, that image, the more they use it, the less powerful it becomes. But it is great to look at a lot of the time. And I thought there was more to it emotionally than the first nun. Like, there's more reason to be emotionally invested in these people this time around. And that Storm Reed was a nice addition to the cast as the nun who is full of doubt, right? Like, she's along for the ride. She's kind of tough. She can help out when things get really tricky here, but has to, you know, find her faith, and that she and Thaisa Farmiga had a nice chemistry. This is marginally better for me than Nun 1.
I want to clarify here. When I say that the first Nun was a silly roller coaster ride, I don't necessarily mean that as a compliment. I actually think that's actually one of the worst films in the Conjuring series. I just think that it is energetic, and it's definitely a spill your popcorn kind of movie. Whereas I found The Nun 2, in attempting to be more frightening, but actually not giving the story or the themes enough juice to really justify that, I found its attempts to frighten me or even alarm me rather subpar. This is a film about an evil nun. You'd think that would have something, you know, to say about our collective anxieties about organized religion or Catholicism in particular, or holiness or death or the demonic. And instead, why is the nun a nun? Because that's a cool costume.
Look, ever since the Madeline books, I've been afraid of nuns. So, I mean,
the scariest nun ever is still the Blues Brothers. I think we can all agree that's never been topped.
The Nun 2 in theaters and wide release beginning today. And that does it for this week. William Bibbiani, film critic for The Wrap and co-host of the critically acclaimed network, and Christy Lemire, film critic for RogerEbert.com and co-host of the YouTube channel Breakfast All Day. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thanks for being awesome.
KCRW sponsors include Disney, presenting Young Woman and the Sea, an incredible true story from producer Jerry Bruckheimer and starring Daisy Ridley, in select theaters Friday.